You're listening to an iHeart podcast.
Mother's Day, 1 year ago. A gorgeous young mom of two girls goes missing. Now, almost 1 year to the date. Mother's Day weekend coming up. There is an arrest for murder in the case of missing mom Suzanne Morphew.
Today marks a major milestone in this investigation of Suzanne Morphew's disappearance. We are announcing that at 09:15 hours this morning, the Chaffee County Sheriff's Office arrested Suzanne Morphew's husband, Barry Morphew. He was taken into custody near his home in Poncha Springs. He was alone at the time of his arrest, and he was arrested without incident.
There is video taken of him being pulled over in a white truck, and it is all over the internet. Just then, you were hearing the Chaffee County Sheriff speaking, but now take a listen to Andrea Sloan Dickey at ABC Denver 7.
Investigators executed nearly 200 search warrants and received more than 1,400 tips about Suzanne Morphew's disappearance over the past year. And today, finally, an arrest. Suzanne was reported missing on Mother's Day last year. She went for a bike ride, never came back.
And even though we now know there has been an arrest, still the local county sheriff's playing it very close to the vest. We can hardly find out anything else. Take a listen to Jay Gray, NBC.
For the better part of a year, they've been searching. And while they won't provide any details,
we do have information that led us to this point today and how we think a certain scenario had occurred.
Tonight, officials say they now know why Suzanne Morphew never made it home from a 2020 Mother's Day bike ride and who they believe is responsible for her disappearance.
Well, that's loud and clear in the arrest of husband Barry Morphew. Joining me, an all-star panel to make sense of what we know now and decipher the details we're being given. Tyson Draper, on the case from the very beginning. He is with the Draper Brothers YouTube channel. He recorded Barry Morphew at the location where Suzanne's bike was found. Wendy Patrick, California prosecutor, author of Red Flags, host of Today with Wendy on KCBQ. And you can find her at WendyPatrickPhD.com. Renowned psychiatrist joining us out of the Atlanta jurisdiction, Dr. Angela Arnold at Dr. at AngelaArnoldMD.com. Cheryl McCollum, director of the Cold Case Research Institute at coldcasecrimes.org. And now, starring in a new podcast, Choir Practice, and believe me, it's got nothing to do with church hymns, professor of forensics, Jacksonville State University, author of Blood Beneath My Feet on Amazon, and star of a brand new series on the True Crime Network, Poisonous Liaisons, Joseph Scott Morgan. But first, to Fox 21 News reporter Lauren Scharf at Lauren Scharf TV, at laurenscharf.com, and at fox21news.com. You can find a huge article she has just posted where she interviewed Suzanne's sister, Lauren Scharf. Let's first of all start with what we learned and what we didn't learn at the press conference. Big bombshell, there's no body.
Yeah, they said that Suzanne has not been recovered. And they continue to search, and they said that it is an open investigation. Nancy, they also said that they haven't made any other arrests. And, of course, the big bombshell was that Barry Morphew, Suzanne's husband, was charged with first-degree murder, tampering with evidence, and also attempting to influence a public servant.
Now, see, that is what I find to be a surprise, trying to influence a public servant. I mean, out to you, Tyson Draper with the Draper Brothers YouTube channel. What does that tell you?
Well, good morning, Nancy. One of the things that we heard along the way was that Barry was trying to, you know, bribe somebody from the fire department or the police department or something along those lines. I never could figure out who it was, and we never could get to the bottom of it.
I've got a pretty good idea, Tyson. I got a really good idea. Cheryl McCollum, remember at the beginning, the story was, and you and I at the time were thousands of miles apart, only to find out later we were both doing the same thing, unbeknownst to the other. It first came out that Barry Morphew, at the time of his wife Suzanne's disappearance, was at some type of continuing firefighter education, I think in Denver, in another city. And I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. You're going to leave on Mother's Day and be gone? Mm-hmm. You can't be there to make one fried egg and a flower from the front yard? Please, seriously? No. And so I started trying to find out what continuing firefighter education are you going to on Mother's Day? And I couldn't find a single thing.
That's right, Nancy. And you and I were very clear that there is no law enforcement or firefighter training at any academy on a Sunday. It doesn't exist. Didn't happen. So I agree with you.
Where we practice, Cheryl, but in every year we've had to take continuing legal education to keep our bar licenses and for investigations, for the latest in DNA, for the latest in techniques. You go every year. It's called PAC, Prosecuting Attorneys Counsel Seminar. It's never on a Sunday.
Never. And ours is called POST, and it's the same thing. But remember, when we looked up their training schedule, we looked up the fire department's training schedule. There was nothing scheduled, not just on that Sunday, but that whole weekend.
So Tyson Draper, I'm just casting my bread upon the water, hoping for a bite. But doesn't that kind of make a little sense to you?
Yeah, it makes perfect sense now. You know, looking forward, you know, we can see that Barry was making this up as he went. You know, he didn't have a firefighter training in Denver or anything like that. He was making all this up on the fly and gathering his workers together to go work on that wall in Broomfield. So as far as that goes, no, I don't think there was ever any kind of training. But as far as the bribe, I'm not sure who it was, Nancy. I don't know if it was a firefighter that maybe he confided in or who, but there's somebody out there that he was trying to bribe.
Back at you, Lauren Scharf, reporter with Fox 21 News, and I really want you to take a look, if you can, at that Fox21News.com interview she has just posted with Suzanne's sister. Lauren Scharf, first of all, we don't have a body. But as any lawyer can tell you, any prosecutor, you can prove a case without a body. Wendy Patrick, isn't that true? We're not going to give a defendant a gold star or an A+ because not only did he manage to kill the victim, but to get rid of their body too. No, that is not going to stop an investigation or a prosecution. Wendy, are you with me? Wendy Patrick. Okay, I think I've lost Wendy. I'm going to circle back to Lauren Scharf. Lauren, we were made acutely aware of the fact that there is not a body. What else, if anything, did you learn yesterday?
Man, I mean, these law enforcement officers, I mean, from local, state to federal, they kept a lot of things tight-lipped throughout this investigation. And, you know, and an arrest had been highly anticipated throughout this whole time, this whole year. On Monday, it will mark 1 year of Suzanne being disappeared. And from the very beginning, it was clear law enforcement had their sights on Barry. As the months passed and he was not cleared, public suspicion heightened. Law enforcement made a public declaration in one of their last press releases, which clearly implicated him when they explicitly pointed out that Barry Morphew was the last known person to have seen Suzanne. This despite Barry's claim that, you know, he told me that he had heard that two people who saw her on Sunday, but, you know, wouldn't tell me exactly who those people were because I would have loved to talk to them.
You know, Lauren, you're so right. That's what I would always do on cross-examination. For instance, just an example, in the Scott Peterson case right now, his sister-in-law, Janie Peterson, is saying, oh, there are people that saw Lacey alive after Scott Peterson went fishing. Okay, who? How can I reach them? How can I talk to them? So you're exactly correct. What two people saw Suzanne Morphew alive, and why would he not give you the names?
That's a great question. I asked the same thing to him, and he couldn't give me an answer, really.
And another thing that's very interesting is everything he said to you can be used at trial. Absolutely. That statement right there can be used for trial. So now he's locked in to what he was telling you.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Guys, for those of you just joining us, in the last hours, a major bombshell in the search for missing mom Suzanne Morphew. Her two daughters have been kept under wraps throughout this entire time, but I now know that her sister, Suzanne's sister, is trying to reach out to the daughters to connect with them at what must be a horrible time in their lives. I mean, Dr. Angela Arnold, psychiatrist, joining us out of the Atlanta jurisdiction at AngelaArnoldMD.com. You've got these two daughters, and I'm curious, Angela, who set up their camping trip for them to be away on Mother's Day weekend, leaving mom alone with Barry Morphew. What do you think they're going through right now?
Right. It just does. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And I mean, Nancy, first of all, they've lost their mother. So they have to grieve the loss of their mother. And now these two kids are going to have to also grieve the loss of their father. So basically, they're going to have been orphaned by this man.
You know, I'm trying to pick through the words we heard yesterday because they were very, very clear. Cheryl McCollum, Joe Scott Morgan, Lauren Scharf, and Tyson Draper, listen to this. They're very clear that they know, quote, the certain scenario and how she was killed. Right now, I'm trying to find out who that redhead is. He's been spotted eating out with and engaged in animated conversation in his truck outside a motel. But first of all, take a listen to the Chaffee County Sheriff. This is John Speezy. Listen.
Today marks the culmination of thousands of hours in this comprehensive investigative effort to locate the mother of two who went missing May 10th of 2020. More than 70 investigators from the Chaffee County Sheriff's Office, the Colorado Bureau of Investigation, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, and dozens of other local law enforcement agencies have provided their expertise on this case. We've executed more than 135 search warrants across Colorado. We've interviewed more than 400 individuals in multiple states. Our team has also investigated more than 1,400 tips generated from within and outside of law enforcement. In early April, the extensive work completed by our investigative team was presented to the 11th Judicial District Attorney's Office. In that multiple hour presentation, we outlined all of the information and evidence we have taken in over the past 12 months. Following that meeting, the District Attorney's Office reviewed our case and information and solidified their decision to move forward on this case.
Is it true, Lauren Scharf, reporter Fox 21, that a cadaver dog at some point during this investigation hit somewhere on one of Barry Morphew's properties, which he then sold? He sold that property and the $1 million plus home he shared with Suzanne Morphew. Did a cadaver dog hit?
That is kind of still unknown. During Andy Suzanne's brother's search back in September, they had multiple cadaver dogs and search dogs check out properties of Barry Morphew's and job sites that mm-hmm. he worked on, mm-hmm. and they hit a couple spots, but the Chaffee County Sheriff's Office came back and they said that, according to them, it wasn't a good enough hit.
Interesting. You know, Cheryl McCollum, you and I have independently taken cadaver dogs out to various locations, mm-hmm. and you know a hit when you see it. Now, law enforcement may say, we're not counting that. It's because they weren't there to see it. But that does not mean it didn't happen. When a cadaver dog hits, you know it's Cheryl McCollum.
No question about it, Nancy. But here's what I love. They've got at least 12 things that I can think of off the top of my head that is circumstantial that it will help with this case. One is he didn't report her missing. He had somebody else do it.
Mm-hmm.
He gave some bogus theory that, oh, it was probably a mountain lion. And then he lied about training. He refused two polygraphs. He tried to bribe a public official. Nancy, there's data from his truck. The truck will tell you where that truck was and did that line up with his stories. It didn't. And then you've got insurance. Then you've got, did he or did he not participate in these searches? Why wasn't he looking for her? He should have been the first one out there. He didn't ask for her safe return for a week. And that tells you he knew daggum good and well she wasn't kidnapped. the chlorine in the hotel room, evidence off the bicycle. Was there dirt? Was there rocks? Was there plants that were indicative of her driving on that road? And then the biggest thing for me was, you've got somebody missing and you sell her house. That's because you know damn well,
it's
she
very
ain't
clear.
Walking
he
up
needs,
that
she
driveway.
Wasn't walking back in the door. And it reminds me so much, again, of Scott Peterson. The minute Lacey goes missing, he orders the porn channel. Did you know that, Jackie?
No.
It'd be a cold day in H-E-double-L. I come home and find David Lynch has ordered the porn channel and tries to sell her house and tries to sell her car. He knew she was not coming back home. And that happened within like a week. All right. Tyson Draper, you're there with your nose to the ground. They're talking about a, quote, certain scenario. Their words, not mine. That's what the sheriff is saying. What is the scenario? What do you know, Tyson?
Well, I want to talk about the hits real quick, Nancy, if you don't mind, because I found out some information on those.
I can't believe you waited. Listen, this is like a big family sitting around the table arguing about something. You don't have to wait on me to call on you like a school teacher.
Just jump in, man. Okay. Well, let me tell you what my theory is. And a lot of people have this same theory with the hit, the dog hit. So the place where the dogs hit, the cadaver dogs, were interesting because that's the spots where Barry used his bobcat. If you don't know what a bobcat is, it's one of those little tractors that he uses for his landscaping business. And what we found interesting, the bobcat became a major focus in this investigation for us, some of us YouTubers, because he used it, we believe, to dispose of Suzanne's body, and that's why the dogs were hitting in these different areas, because he used the bobcat.
Okay, wait, let me understand what you're saying. With me is Tyson Draper, and you can find him. He's got a YouTube channel called The Draper Brothers. So if he used the bobcat to dispose of Suzanne's body at any time, and then the bobcat was used in different places, a cadaver dog will probably hit on multiple places where the bobcat was then used. Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly what I'm saying, Nancy.
Okay.
So he was planting a bunch of trees in different spots at the Longhorn Ranch subdivision and then some other spots. So the focus of the investigation when Andy was there, and you got to remember that this was an independent search, independent of the Chaffee County. They weren't involved in it. And so it wasn't their cadaver dog. So they didn't put a lot of credibility on that. So anyway, he was planting trees and this is where the dogs hit. So we wanted to dig down and see if maybe she was buried where he put those trees, but Chaffee County wouldn't do it. They just came and looked, they just observed it and then kind of, you know, picked up some dirt, shuffled it around and then left and said, well, she's not here. So there's really been, as far as I know, there's been no digs at those sites, but they were very interesting because those dogs were hitting very frantically in those areas.
You know, Cheryl McCollum, you and I were just out at a cold case site recently looking for a young woman that went missing. And you and I both saw the dog hit. Okay. So then we did groundbreaking sonar.
Correct.
I'm very surprised that the sonar has not been brought to the scene.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
For those of you just joining us, big development in the case of missing mom Suzanne Morphew. In the last hours, her husband, Barry Morphew, has been arrested, and we're trying to figure out what happened, because the sheriffs are not saying, and they don't have to. Just because we want to know does not mean they need to divulge what's going on in an ongoing investigation. What do I mean? They do not have her body. But everybody on this panel told you on about day two that Suzanne Morphew was no longer amongst us, no longer amongst the living. There's no way she would have stayed away from her children and her family the way she has. Guys, I want you to take a listen to more of what we are learning.
Prosecutors will not say how Suzanne Morphew died, They do not know where her body is buried. But tonight, nearly a year to the day since she disappeared, they believe they know who killed her.
Barry Morphew, the person Suzanne built a life with, had children with, who begged for her safe return, is now charged in her murder.
Barry Morphew is in a holding cell in Chaffee County. The DA says he isn't talking.
Well, that much is true. That was Ann Trujillo and Shannon Ogden at ABC Denver 7. Now take a listen to Sloan Dickey.
Yeah, the big news from here today is this is no longer being looked at as a missing person investigation for Suzanne Morphew, as her husband, Barry Morphew, was arrested on first-degree murder charges. The Chaffee County Sheriff, John Breezy, did not disclose much information about the nature of the case, such as what information over the past year led to the arrest of Barry Morphew. Search teams still have not located Suzanne given us any information. They have narrowed their search for her body. The sheriff did say that law enforcement has been collecting evidence and building their case over the past year leading up to the arrest.
Today is not the day for celebration, nor does it mark the end of this investigation. Rather, it's the next step in this very difficult yet very important journey.
To Tyson Draper, to your understanding, what do they have? They're talking about a year's worth of investigation leading up to culminating in the arrest. What is it?
I think it's just the technology side of it. I think it's the phone pings. I think it's the text messages. I think it's a lot of that stuff, circumstantial. Nancy, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what they have. They've been so tight.
As I tell law enforcement when they take the stand, don't ever tell me I don't know. Tell me what you think. I know you think something. You have been out there in the thick of it. And I believe what you said is correct, Tyson Draper. To you, Lauren Scharf, the pings, on his cell phone, the data from his truck or another vehicle. I pray to God law enforcement has taken the Bobcat and every other thing connected to Barry Morphew to prove this case. What do you think, Lauren Scharf?
Nancy, they have done over 400 interviews. So there's people who witnessed something out of the ordinary that weekend that notified law enforcement. They took up 1,400 tips and followed those tips. And I mean, they worked this case relentlessly for those 12 months. And I know because they're not releasing a lot of information yet, doesn't mean they, the district attorney, Linda Stanley, says she is confident that she can get a conviction out of the evidence that was presented to her. And she said, you know, she wouldn't have presented a warrant unless she had a confident case, and she did.
Yeah, well,
Nancy, that's a big part of this, because remember, prosecutors can't file charges unless they think they can prove the case beyond a reasonable doubt. So while we know under the law, no body, no problem, they can still prove murder through what you just heard. Good old-fashioned police work. 135 search warrants, 1,400 tips. They interviewed more than 400 people. And the charges themselves tell the story of what we can expect to see in court. We don't need the facts to know a little bit about the motive here because of the charges.
And another thing, Wendy Patrick.
Nancy,
jump in.
Yeah, just recently here in Colorado, there were two cases that got a conviction. That's Kelsey Barris back in Teller County, and then also the Kelsey Schilling case that just wrapped up. It was a 9-year investigation in Pueblo County.
And another thing, Wendy Patrick, is that you should never go forward unless you're ready for trial, because what the defense can do is slap you with a demand for speedy trial under the Constitution, which means you've got to try your case either in that grand jury term or the next two. And typically they last about 2 months each, which means once you file an indictment and a grand jury returns an indictment, if they hit you with a speedy trial demand, you've got 6 months max to take the case to trial, or there is an automatic dismissal without the right to refile the charges. So you better be ready once you bring formal charges. You know, I was going to follow up on what they may have, but one thing always struck me as highly probative to you, Tyson Draper, Didn't Barry Morphew, wasn't he spotted out searching in a dump for Suzanne Morphew's bike helmet?
Yeah, well, that was at a bike shop in downtown Salida.
Right.
Yeah, he was searching through the trash can, supposedly looking for her helmet. So he left that little note. I don't know if you guys have all seen that little note that was very vague. It said like she had a blue bike helmet and blue clothes or something like that. Well, the person that was running the shop stepped out and asked him what he was doing, digging through the garbage can. And then he started this whole dialogue about her helmet. He was looking for her helmet in the trash can. Very bizarre.
Very, very unusual. And I want to go to Joe Scott Morgan, professor of forensics, Jacksonville State University, and author of Blood Beneath My Feet, now on Amazon. Joe Scott, they have something, and they've got something that's very, very powerful. They may not have a body, but they've got something. What is it?
Yeah, that's, I sat there and I was listening to the press conference yesterday. And when Linda Stanley, the prosecutor, stood up or came forward to the mic and specifically said, we're charging him with first degree murder. She didn't go any other route. It's first degree murder. And there's just certain things, elements of that crime that have to be met. And I was reading over that. And one of the things that this goes to, and I think that this is what she's hanging her hat on, or what the prosecutor's office is hanging their hat on, is indifference to the value of human life. You cause the death of another person by knowingly engaging in contact, which creates a grave risk of death. There's no other element contained within Colorado statute that met that other than this. And so I think, and this is kind of what I was thinking about, just like you guys in prosecutors, you have elements of a crime. There's also something in forensic pathology and elements of the body. I'm really wondering, maybe we don't have a body in this case. However, I'm wondering if they haven't come across an area, and I'm thinking specifically out where that bike made contact with another vehicle, if there was, say, for instance, a copious amount of blood out there, or that they found it somewhere else, that would deem this or her,
just
her,
got,
her person,
just got,
hang on, her person
her
as,
bike never collided with anybody. He
we
made
don't
that
know
up.
That. Look, how do we know that? How do we know that?
They because he's now
anything.
Been charged with murder.
Yeah,
and he
well,
wasn't.
Let me
okay,
tell you
go
something.
Ahead.
I think that they have come across some kind of biological sample at some point in time that would make her incompatible, or to make her absence incompatible with life. She's been gone too long. Okay. You got to shut
okay,
the door on that.
Can I just break it down? I think you're trying to say you believe they found so much blood somewhere that she could not have survived.
Yeah. And they would call that incompatibility with life. Yeah.
I would call it finding so much blood that she's not alive. That's what I would call it.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Suzanne Morphew's husband, Barry Morphew, has now been charged with murder. Got a lot of questions, including who's that redhead he's been hanging out with, much younger redhead, and it's not his daughter. Curious. First of all, take a listen to Mormon on Dr. Phil. This is the brother, Andy Mormon.
The EVI information on his truck didn't line up, Phil. He said he saw her at 5 a.m., and he did not.
And how do you know that?
Testimony from an employee that he was rambling down the road, texting people at 4 a.m, trying to get them to go to Broomfield.
So
can't be at home at 5.
And talking to somebody on the road at 4.
Right.
That is so that the timeline doesn't add up at all.
Yeah, not at all.
You've got two nieces, Mallory, who's now 22, and Macy, who's 16. Would she go off riding by herself, or would she be in contact with them? Would she go off the radar for 7 days and have no social media presence, no presence electronically for that period of time with her daughters?
No, absolutely not.
You are here hearing our friend Dr. Phil speaking to Suzanne's brother, but that's not all that he said. Take a listen to the brother speaking to KDVR-TV. Listen.
I think she was abducted Saturday, not Sunday. I don't think she ever got on her bicycle, if you want the truth of the matter. I expect that she was killed and hidden somewhere in the mountains.
And her husband, not involved in this search, have you talked to him? What's the relationship there?
I have not talked to him. He was invited into the search by Profiling Evil, and he did not respond. We ran into him yesterday, and he was out hanging trail cams with a shotgun on his shoulder and just kind of told us, you know, hey, you're about to step on private property. So we turned around and went back. We did uncover some things on that mountaintop close to the home yesterday that are being processed by CBI and the Sheriff's Department. And we hope to find more today.
Do you think anyone would want to hurt Suzanne?
No, I really don't. I'm afraid this is domestic abuse, to be honest with you.
I can tell you this much, Cheryl McCollum. If somebody accused me of domestic or child abuse, I would sue the living pants off them that day. But even after Suzanne's brother, and he said it on Dr. Phil, he said it to KDVR-TV, I think Barry Morphew killed my sister, and I think it was domestic abuse. Not a peep. I would have had him strung up on the flagpole in a New York minute.
Nancy,
but nothing,
it ain't,
not a word was said.
It ain't slander if it's true. So he's going to sue him for what? He knows the truth. And here's something else. There's evidence on that bicycle. There's evidence at the house, and there's evidence on that bobcat. And I'm going to paraphrase you. When you were my prosecutor, we had a case that was straight up circumstantial. You looked at that jury, and you said, he's a killer. Don't reward him for being good at it. We don't need a body. We got everything else.
You know, I've always been curious, Lauren Scharf, and I haven't ever really gotten an answer, although I think I know the answer. Who started the whole bike scenario to start with? I thought Barry Morphew was out of town, either at continuing firefighter education, whoops, no, on a job he made up that morning at 4 a.m., and he called the neighbor lady. Did he tell her Suzanne may be out on her bike? Where did that come from?
You're right, Nancy. Barry told me that he, you know, asked her to look for Suzanne's car. The car was in the garage, and then asked her, hey, is her bike there? You know, he said, hey, maybe I asked her. Yeah, I might have asked her if her bike was there. And so it sounded like, you know,
he started it.
The neighbor. Exactly.
And then what a surprise, Tyson Draper. There was the bike like it had crashed.
Yep. It was Barry that planted that idea. I want to piggyback off of what the other gentleman said a while ago, if you don't mind, about them maybe finding a copious amount of material or whatever. I agree with that because, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't it unusual that law enforcement held Barry Morphew's house for 3 weeks? They found something there because I've talked to people that were at the original search, Barry Morphew's friends that came from Indiana, and they said as soon as they walked into the house, it smelled, had a strong odor of bleach. So Barry was in there cleaning up something in that house, and I don't think they would have held it for 3 weeks. Do you?
Well, you're absolutely right, Tyson, and they did hold it for several weeks, and I saw them taking out paper bags of evidence. I mean, Dr. Angela Arnold, you're the psychiatrist. You're the MD. I'm just a JD. But isn't it odd how so many husbands turn into real neatniks as soon as their wife goes missing? Bleach, laundry, right. I mean, tearing up the carpet and replacing it. It's amazing how that happens, right?
Yeah, I'm sure they don't even know what bleach is until it comes to something like this, right? I'm sure they've never cleaned a toilet with bleach or anything like that.
You know,
oh, hey now.
Guys, what about the redhead? Can somebody tell me about this woman? Anybody? Jump in. Draper? Lauren Scharf, yeah, who is she?
Go ahead, Lauren.
She's a friend, a really good friend of Suzanne, and she was talking to Barry. Those pictures, I've seen them from the Daily Mail. She was talking to Barry and confronting him about what was going on.
Did she have to confront him twice, once in a restaurant and then once in his truck?
I think he drove her to the restaurant.
Well, it would be a cold day in H-E-double-L before I'd get alone in a car with a truck with Barry Morphew. But hey, that's just me. Guys, so much we've learned about the also significance of her going missing on Mother's Day? You know, I've never gotten an answer, and I imagine Tyson Draper or Lauren Scharf may know the answer. Who arranged the camping trip for the two daughters?
Well, what I heard, it was the one of the sisters, one of Barry's sisters, and I've never had an official confirmation on that, but that's what we got on that, Nancy.
Okay, so he did not arrange the camping trip, correct?
That's unclear.
No.
I would say unclear.
Okay, but if it's his sister arranging it, he had to talk back and forth with her about it. So I'm very curious about that. But I do know this. Take a listen to Erica Gonzalez, KDVR, Fox 31.
A coworker of Suzanne's husband came forward with this new information about the hotel room in Broomfield, Jeff Puckett said, and Barry Morphew told him to go to Denver. However, Puckett says that he didn't see Morphew because he had already left due to a family emergency. Puckett told the Daily Mail that when he got into the Holiday Inn on May 10th, the room smelled like chlorine and it was scattered with wet towels. He also said that he found a pile of mail inside of that room, including a letter about property insurance, which he says he later turned over to the FBI. A manager at the hotel confirmed they do not use chlorine to clean guest rooms and have handed security footage over to police. Additionally, the hotel told her news partner the pool was also closed because of COVID-19. Suzanne Morphew was reported missing back on Mother's Day.
You know, I didn't realize that the home, in addition to this hotel room smelling chlorine, that the home also smelled of bleach. There you have it. Cheryl McCollum, that's what you were saying, that the information that's taken off the navigation system within Barry Morphew's own truck, will reveal he was already on the road to the made-up job that nobody seemed to know about till that morning when he said he was back at the house kissing her goodbye on Mother's Day. So right there, the story is not jiving.
It's not jiving. And what he was doing in that hotel room was cleaning the tools that he used to get rid of her with.
I'm telling you, Nancy, they've got copious amounts of blood. It's incompatible with life. I hate to keep saying that, but you don't go to all of these locations, take this much time, and collect this much evidence without there being something. The key to this is that they don't know where he deposited her. There is evidence that blood has been spilled. I'm telling you, somewhere along the way, and they're going to be able to pry. And I think that they have typed that blood. They were able to type that blood, and they're going to be able to tie it back to her and say that that is her. And if these instruments that Mac is talking about, and he did a crappy job of cleaning them, you know, why clean them? Why not just throw them away? Well, he's cleaned them, so maybe he's retained them because, you know, he works with his hands. He likes his tools. He still got them. I bet he doesn't have them anymore. You know who does have them? Colorado State Crime Lab or the FBI Crime Lab. And there's going to be physical evidence.
And think about what's following all that evidence you just heard about. This is a classic case where the cover-up is evidence of the crime. So what we're doing, if you're going to look for blood, we're going to follow every place he used bleach and chlorine and everything else. That seems to be the way we're sort of going to work backwards and find the crime through evidence of the cover-up.
Man, I'd have been down those faucets like a hedgehog trying to get any scintilla of blood evidence. What were you saying?
Nancy, this is also an example of somebody that is not a criminal career killer like a hitman. If he killed her in that home and she bled on the carpet, and he got rid of the carpet and then cleaned the wood, he has no idea about luminol. He has no idea that could seep under the baseboard and all you got to do is remove it and her blood is right there. And the wood underneath, if it's not treated, they can extract DNA from it.
You know, let me throw this at you, Joe Scott. Well, everybody, at the get-go, I would have assumed that he would have strangled her, asphyxiated her somehow, but that would have required him looking her in the eyes.
Yeah.
Which makes me now think the two of you are correct that it was a bloody crime scene. Because I don't think he's got the backbone, let me say in a nice way, to look her in the eyes and kill her. Go ahead.
You know, this is my thought. You know, this is a big strapping guy. You know, you see all the pictures of him. He looks like some kind of, you know, gym rat, you know, when you take a look at him. I was thinking the same thing. Why not just wrap your hands around her tiny little throat and choke the life out of her?
I don't like the way you said that. You've been thinking about this way too much.
Well, I have been. And this goes more to Angela, but I got to tell you, this gives me an indication if what we're saying is plausible and there's a lot of blood, this goes to passion. And did he beat the hell out of this poor woman? And then now, like Mac was saying, he's dragging her all around. He's thinking, oh, God, I got to cast a wide net to get rid of all of this physical evidence. I know I've seen something on crime shows about depositing, you know, leaving behind biological evidence. Now I got to go behind myself. And he's cut a wide swath.
Oh, how I would like to see him on some surveillance video buying that bleach. We wait as justice unfolds. Nancy Gray's Crime Story signing off. Goodbye, friend.
You're listening to an iHeart podcast.